Loud. All right, great. Hi, and welcome to our NEPT Open Coaching and Support Call. This is our call. It's probably our second call for April 2018. It's our last call for April 2018 because I'm leaving on vacation tomorrow. Yay! Getting to go visit my son in Europe. So I'm excited to be going. Yeah, I'm really excited about it. So we've crammed all of our monthly calls into a 2-week period, which has been quite exciting. Quite a week. So the way that these calls work, it looks like a few others joined. So we had Susan and who else? Oh, Annette and Lynn. Great. So the way these calls work is it's open forum for whatever you need support with. If you have a particular case, a person you want to talk about, if you have labs you want me to review, if you have questions about any of the materials and that you're studying, content-wise materials, anything at all that I can support you with, I will. So I'm going to take a moment to have an advertisement for our retreat, which is coming up in a month. So excited. A bunch of you are signed up to do the Laura Fine Awakening class the 3 days before, and I'm really excited for you because I think it's going to transform not only your professional relationships, but your personal relationships as well. And I've seen that for me as far as my personal relationships with all my family members, in particular my husband, but my kids, my siblings, just by way of really being with people on a real authentic level and feeling how they're feeling, but not cowering into that, because that would be my tendency is like, oh, if they're upset and angry, I'm just going to cower down, and learning how to stand up to that. But also when, you know, I'm not giving up my power, but also not, but understanding where they're coming from. So I've really enjoyed that. So that's the 3 days, the 15th, 16th, 17th. The 18th is our practice accelerator. That's just for the practice accelerator group. And we'll be reaching out to make sure that whoever hasn't responded in that group, we've already got a few that have responded. I think, Lynn, you responded in that, but you're not in that group, Lynn Rose. But I think you said you might have gotten confused by the thing. I'm just going. Right? Click the buttons. We will be sending out a questionnaire Doreen's working on, and she'll be sending it out over the next few days for those of you who are coming, just to find out your exact plans, like what day you're arriving, when you're leaving. I mean, if you want to give us flight information too, we can coordinate that with the other folks that are coming in, arrange rides, that sort of thing, just so we know exactly who's coming for accommodations and for meals for the crew. If you're local and you're not staying overnight, you have the option of purchasing meals. So I was just told yesterday that wasn't real clear, but you have the option of purchasing meals, or, you know, you just call Chris at the Ancient Heal. What is it? The Ancient Yoga Center.com.
It's Ancient Yoga Center, but she really prefers it if you email. She's more likely to respond to an email, because I know Lynn Rose had mentioned about not hearing back from a phone call, but she really prefers an email. So
email her, give her your information. If you're a commuter, you know, you're living locally and you're going to commute and you want to partake in lunch with us, or even dinner and breakfast as well, just let her know and she'll arrange that, and she'll arrange for whatever the fee is for that. So I'm excited about it. Lynn and Jan and I met yesterday to kind of go over our ideas for some of the topics, and we're going to put out a poll on the site about some of the topics we're looking at. If there's anything in particular you're like, I just really want to get some more information about that, let us know. And we can't necessarily accommodate all of them, but we will see where we can. And if we can't, then we'll arrange for some other call that we can follow up with, a special call with that.
Put the poll on the NEPT Facebook group. So with some ideas. So,
okay. So we have set things, and we do individual session. Everybody has the option. There's no mandatory, but everybody gets a time, like a 20-minute time period where all attention gets focused on whatever it is it's that you feel like you need to push you forward to the next level. For some people, it's a personal issue, and we've had lots of personal issues come up, and we've helped people work through. For some people, it's their own health. And that, you know, working on that. And we've had people bring their labs and sit there and really go through and get some ideas with that. For a lot, it's the business aspect of it, and, you know, creating programs and that. So it's whatever it is for you that we get the attention on you. And those sessions have been pretty much life changing for most people. They've been pretty profound. And so that's part of it. And then we have other sections where we have specific topics that I know I want to share, that I've heard a lot of buzz about, what I want to prepare for you. And then there's some open slots where we can just pick and choose, and we can, you know, see what people want to be focusing on. And it's all about us coming together as a community and connecting, because I think connection is a real big piece of it. And you make relationships much more, you know, cemented when there's the in-person connection, and then supporting each other moving forward. So I hope that as many of you as possible can come, and just make sure that you let us know that you're coming. And I know, Susan, you said yes. I was wondering, because we had multiple places to say yes, because we're like, are people seeing this? Are they getting it? So we put a Facebook event up, and Susan, you said yes on that, but you didn't say yes in the other one. So we're going to do a final, like, here, let us know your plans. Just fill in this form and let us know when you're coming and all that kind of stuff. Your cell phone number too, so that we can actually, you know, be able to connect with everybody in that moment. So I'm excited. It's only a month away, and this is one of the highlight of my year. That and Shine are like, I just love them. I love it. I like this one better because it's smaller and more intimate and less work, a lot less work. So, all right. So who has questions, comments, cases, anything you want to share, talk about? Do you have anything in chat? I have six. I see six things in chat. I haven't been able to get the retreat to return. Oh, the retreat center. That was you. Yeah. Better to email them. Great. Oh, it's .org. I said .com. So it's ancient. Yeah, let's see. AncientYogaCenter.com. Okay. Kimberly, open up your line.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Good.
I've been having some weird symptoms since late January. I've had some numbness on the left side of my body. It's gone down my arm, through my eye, my tongue, and my neck. And, you know, I've got half Western people saying you got to run and get an MRI ASAP with and without contrast. And then I've got, you know, chiropractors and neurologists or naturopaths saying, no, it's your L5, L6. You've got a pinched nerve. I don't know. Okay.
So tell me more. I want to hear more about the symptoms. So it's in your face.
Yeah, and it just happens, and it's episodic. So it's like I've had 7 episodes. It lasts about 24 hours.
They last 24 hours. So it's face,
yep.
It's arm. So that rules out L5S1, just saying. And leg and
I meant C5.
Oh, C, okay.
Sorry, okay. C5. Yeah. So sorry.
Okay.
L5 was another year.
Okay, yep. Good. Is it just the arm, just the upper extremity and the face, or is it down the leg?
Mostly it's just the arm down to the fingers, the face, and then this. This is my carotid artery, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So yes, easily could be a musculoskeletal. And one of the ways to differentiate is it affected by movement in particular positions? I don't know if you've had a chiropractor or somebody who's trained in doing physical assessments take you through, and I can take you through a few of those movements and just determine if some of that's going on. My son had a similar thing happening, and
really?
He's in Italy, and I can't touch him. You know, I can't do anything.
Yeah.
So I took him through over the phone. It wasn't even on a visual. So do it this way, do it that way, do it that way. We determined it was his neck.
Okay.
And, you know, he did some stretching. I had him do some hot packs, hot, cold contrast kind of things on it and do some stretching and movement. And when he said, yeah, it's hurting when I carry my backpack, you know, and it went away. But he was scary because it went into the face, and that kind of gets people scared, right, when you start to see numbness in the face. Right?
Yeah, that's really
right. Right, but that's what he had, and it went away. And it was pretty clearly a musculoskeletal. So you want to know, does it get worse when you reach your arm back like this? And it's hard to tell if you don't have it right now, but that's one.
I mean, I'm having just a little bit of it today.
Okay. And so usually bring your arm back for one thing.
Yeah.
Any change?
It doesn't hurt.
Okay. So what you want to do is you want to take a deep breath in and hold it. And then bring your arm out to the side. And then turn your head to the right. And then when you can't hold it anymore, let go and tell me what that feels like.
It is more sore, but I have to say I did go to a body worker today who was working on it. So I don't know if I'm just sore from all
well,
that
soreness. Work. So you feel the soreness, but did it do anything at all to the numbness? Make sure you breathe and hold it and turn.
Not really noticing much. Yeah.
Now do the same thing, but turn it towards. So arm out and then turn it left. Big deep breath. If you keep your body straight, you're just wanting to pull. Yeah, body straight and the arm back. Now head over to that same side. Breath.
I do feel more of it like here. I think.
You do. Okay. So that's testing the scalene muscle, which attaches from the vertebrae here into the rib cage.
Okay.
Now the brachial plexus, which has nerves and vessels, comes through and under that muscle. So when there's tension in that muscle and then you add more tension to it by big breath, aggravating it, it gets worse. That could be that there's a brachial plexus, a thoracic outlet syndrome is what we call it.
Okay.
So it could be a thoracic outlet syndrome. Tell me about the fingers that it goes to. Is it just certain fingers? Is it the same all the time?
Well, I think it's like the index and the middle and maybe the ring finger, but mostly it's the middle.
Mostly in the middle. Okay. So it's possible that it has a similarity to a carpal tunnel, right? So I'm always looking for if there's nerve compression, where's the nerve compression coming from? Is it a thoracic outlet? Is it a carpal tunnel? Or is it what we call a double crush syndrome? Or is it a triple crush syndrome, right? So if there's some stuff in the neck where the nerve root's coming out of the neck and then it gets this scalene muscle is tight, and that presses down on it, and there's some issues with the carpal tunnel, then all of those three things come together, which would make it episodic because then, you know, certain positions, maybe a way you slept, a certain stressful thing, a way you were at the keyboard could affect it. Okay? So there's those kinds of things you do to rule it out. And then just general neck movement all the way to the, as far as you can go to the right and left, and you compare, oh, wow, I can go further to one side than the other. And see if that causes any pain. There's that, and that's going to close down what's called the foramen in between the vertebrae. And if there's some issues with neck alignment, then that's going to create some pain. I get a little pain when I do that.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, me too. Well, yeah. One thing I've wondered is I do have a stand-up desk, and my vision's not great. Kind of like, yeah, I have the same situation you do. I'm doing that all the time.
Yeah.
And because I'm studying all these courses, I'm like doing this all day long. I wondered, could that be doing it?
Absolutely. Because so much of it comes from repetitive stress, right? Repetitive postural stress, right? So in general, if you have people, like the first thing I start to, you know, first thing, of course, your minds go to the worst possible situation. Oh, okay. Somebody says they have, you know, eye and face and hands, you know, like, okay, MS, rule out MS. And that's what your Western people were doing. They want to rule out MS, right? Get an MRI, get a contrast MRI. They don't want to be held liable, right? If
exactly.
It is MS.
Yeah.
Right? Uh-huh. So the physical medicine people are going, oh, it's just let's just see. Let's take you through the process of ruling in or out that process. So it sounds like there could be some scalene. Now that you say this, that would definitely put stress on the scalenes. The people that are under a lot of stress, they do the shallow breathing.
That's me.
Right? That's put stress on the scalenes. The scalenes should not be involved in breath unless you're having to do like really rapid breathing because, you know, you're running away from a tiger, right? But it should be abdominal breath. So when you do use the scalenes, they're an auxiliary muscle of respiration. When you use your auxiliary muscle of respiration more often than you should when you're under stress and you're doing shallow breathing, add that to this posture of, you know, trying to lean forward, add that to this kind of exaggerated, of course, posture of being on a keyboard, right? Yeah. All of that is closing down your chest muscles, they're compressing it down, pulling on the scalene. So what you want to do is you want to be doing some exercises. I would do the wall push-ups where you open up like this and you push in. Open up your chest, right? For the scalene muscle, it's a hard one to massage because it's so deep in there, but you can do some sort of massage for that. If you look up Travel trigger point therapy, there's actually a really good book. You don't even have to get Travel's. I don't know if I have it right here. I have it on the other shelf, but it's a trigger point book that I got on Amazon that was written by, I think, a physical therapist, and it has pictures of all the referral patterns for different places where there's trigger points.
Oh, that sounds good.
Right. So just look up on Amazon trigger points for lay people or something like that. And I think you'll find it. I don't remember the exact name of it.
Okay.
Pictures, but even if you just Google trigger point scalenes, mm-hmm. you know, trigger points, pectoralis, usually it's pectoralis minor that gets involved in that, brachial plexus compression. Okay. Right. And then get some exercises to open this up. Right. Wear glasses if you're, or put your computer closer to you.
Well, I've got contacts. I just refuse to keep getting them, you know, up because
I understand. Just move your. I have mine. I'm on a stand up desk, and I have my monitors on a thing, and I can push it way back, or I can pull it way forward, right? And so when my eyes start to get tired at the end of the day, because I refuse to wear glasses and contacts unless I'm driving, I will pull it closer. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning, I'm going, wow, what the heck was I doing with this thing so close? I can't see that. And then I push it back. So that's an option too. You know, so much is ergonomics. I remember having this lady come in and they wanted to do surgery on her carpal tunnel. And we had this one consultation. I showed her some exercises. They said, you know, come in next week. We'll do like once or twice a week. I'll do some ultrasound. We'll do some stretches. I'll give you this exercise. But I gave her home care. She called in the middle of the week and she canceled it. She goes, my carpal tunnel is gone. I just changed my keyboard. Like you said, I've been doing this and everything's fine. They wanted to do surgery.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So we just need to take care of ourselves, and that, you know, opening up your chest, all of us should be opening it up our chest multiple times a day, because we spend so much time in that hunched position. And that's what ends up, you know, as people get older, they get the Dowager's hump in their fist, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Open it up, stretch it out, do wall push-ups. And again, I want to make this practical for everybody else. Yeah. When somebody starts to complain about some specific symptoms, you want to be able to rule out, do they have a metabolic problem or do they have a musculoskeletal problem? And sometimes they may have a combination of both. But again, like with my son, I went, oh, I hope he doesn't have MS, right? Like that's the first thing I started thinking about.
Yeah, I know. It's scary. I know.
Right. Well, but you know that if you do that, you're not going to go for the medical treatment of MS, which is non-existent. It's just steroids to placate for the rest of your life. And you're just going to get deteriorate. You know that you're going to, like, whatever you're not doing, that's you should be doing for healing, for the stresses in your body, for the heavy metals, for the viruses, for everything, you'd be looking at leaky gut, you know, the whole bit.
Definitely. Right? Now the neurologist, you know, said we got to rule out MS and lupus. And I said, well, if I do have MS, what would you do for it? And she said, well, meds, of course. And I said, well, have you read Terry Walls' book? And she said, well, yeah, a patient just brought it in. And I did read it. It was good. And I said, well, what about that? And she said, well, that's an intense diet. And I said, well, my diet's intense. And she said, well, then you could probably do it. I'm like, why am I paying
why
you?
Why is she ruling out? But why is she not mentioning it to people because she thinks it's an intense diet?
Yeah,
being in a freaking wheelchair for the rest of your life is intense. Eating whole fresh foods is not intense.
I agree.
That's all I have to say, right?
I know. And she was out in California. I live in Connecticut. So I went out there. She's a DO. I thought, okay, maybe. But not, you know, it was crazy. So
crazy, yeah.
I didn't want to have the contrast. I mean, I've been trying to get heavy metals out of my body.
And you don't, personally, I'm just going to say my opinion. Not this does not represent the opinions of this channel or this institute or anything else. This is me saying my personal opinion. I don't really want to know.
Yeah.
If I have a quote unquote disease and then there's a label, there's a psychological tendency to get negative and fearful and live down that pathway. Personally, I don't want to know.
Other people find out about it.
Oh, yeah. Then they treat
you. That's even worse.
And then they give you a hard time, right? And if you get that test done, I mean, right now, medicine is looking, and the drug companies are looking to take it over, right, where people don't have a choice.
Yeah.
If you've got a diagnosis on paper and you don't do the medical whatever protocol, that you can be forced and chained and put in a hospital. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I don't want it on paper. If I have a disease, good. I'm just going to notice symptoms and go, something's wrong. What's out of balance? Have I been sleeping enough? Yeah. Have I been pooping enough? You know, what am I doing right? What am I doing wrong? What are my thoughts like? And just manage it. Do I have heavy metals? Let me go test it. Right.
Yeah.
Let me go get an oat test and see what my chemistry is. Right.
Yeah.
So I would do some of this musculoskeletal stuff, but also, you know, look at where you can improve.
Yeah. Right?
Where are there places where you can improve?
Well, for another time, we'll go over my blood because that's not looking so great either. But that's another time. I think it's this because I went away for 3 weeks and I didn't have it.
Mm.
You know, I was on vacation and visiting, you know, I just didn't have it. I thought,
yeah.
And I had something a little bit after eating a lot of chocolate, and I thought maybe I've got some allergy to chocolate, or I didn't know. But anyway, I think this is.
Yeah, go for that. Do whatever you can. Find a chiropractor that works with thoracic outlet syndrome and knows what it is and doesn't just crack, crack. You're on your way. Come back 3 times a week for the rest of your life, and I'll keep you healthy.
What do you think about that neck thing? You know, that neck crack, that adjustment?
It's amazing.
Oh,
I'll do one for you. Come to the retreat. Line up.
I wish I could. I have a graduation, a college graduation. But really the neck, you don't mind like twisting it. I mean, cause there's a guy I've been working with. He said, that's what you need. I said, I know I need that. I woke up this morning thinking I need that, but I'm kind of afraid.
You're afraid of it? Yeah.
I've had it before many times, but I just kept getting more and more scared each time.
Here's what I have against that is when chiropractors say, oh, I have, they cut people with carpal tunnel. They take them in and they say, we just have to adjust your neck. Adjusting the next part of it. I have great success with carpal tunnel. What do I use? I adjust their neck. I do ultrasound. I work on the scalenes. I do trigger point therapy. I work on the rotator cuff muscles. I work on every muscle that I find a trigger point in all the way down. I do acupuncture. I do ultrasound on the thing. I have them do exercises. I spread it out. I adjust their wrist. I give them good nutrition.
Yeah.
That's how I treat it.
Yeah. Well, this guy was good. He did all the other body work. He doesn't know the health stuff quite. I mean, the diet.
Well, that's good. Then find somebody who will do the trigger. Cause a lot of chiropractors will just think, you know, just the adjustments are all you need.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Somebody that's going to work the muscles, that's going to check it. I mean, we reverse. I mean, I don't do that stuff anymore except on my family members, but I mean, people with frozen shoulders, people with thoracic outlets, people with stuff, you know, we get them up and working around in 3-4 times because it give them the stuff they do. We do a lot of stuff, but it's a combination.
Yeah. That was good.
Yeah.
Thank you. This helps. Really. Okay.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is that helpful to anybody else to hear that stuff?
Sorry. You
know, and again, the same thing with heart, right? If somebody has chest pain, the first thing they want to do, I have friends who just, they had chest pain. They ended up spending $10,000, go to the emergency room and finding out it was nothing, right? So you want to do a battery of tests to kind of rule it out. Yes, you don't want to take a chance. My son calls me up one day. I was in California. He was in Texas. And he says, Mom, I think I'm having a heart attack. I'm like, what are you doing right now? I'm driving. I have a pain in my chest. Okay, tell me about your pain. And we go through this whole thing. And he goes this and that. And I said, what'd you do this morning? He goes, oh, I had the lifeguarding exam. Tell me about your lifeguarding exam. Oh, we had to tread water with our arms up over our head, holding up something heavy and tread water for 10 minutes. I said, yeah, that's why your chest hurts. He goes, oh, really? Thank you. Bye. And he went to work. Right. So a heart pain is like, it doesn't get worse when you move your arms. It doesn't get worse when you lift. It doesn't get worse when you twist. It feels like an elephant sitting on your chest, right? And it may shoot up into the arm, into the face. It may shoot up into the shoulder and down the arm, right? But if it's a musculoskeletal thing, you take a deep breath. And you go, oh, it's most likely a rib subluxation or something in the intercostal muscles, right? This one lady came to see me. She had been and spent $10,000 on all kinds of diagnostic tests for her chest pain. But she'd never been to a chiropractor, never been checked out. And I tested her and I found a couple. She goes, whoa, that hurts. I adjusted her back. I adjusted her neck. I explained to her and she calls me up. She was worse first because that sometimes happens when you have an adjustment. And then after that, chest pain went away. after $10,000 of diagnostic tests. So we work on, you know, this program works on nutrition and biochemistry and food and supplements and herbs and all, but we have a whole module on it. What module is it, Lynn? Like 32? I don't remember. One of our modules is on the physical medicine, musculoskeletal, where we teach you enough basics so you know what kind of things to look for, because not everything's going to be in the nutrition and not everything's going to be in the musculoskeletal. And I would show people a model when they would come in to see me, and I'd say, you know, all of these stressors, it's like the seven pillars, but all of these stressors can contribute to whatever symptoms you're having. And your friend might have referred you to an acupuncturist because they have the same symptoms as you, and they got help with acupuncture. And another friend got help with the same symptoms with chiropractic, and another got help with nutrition. Does it mean that these things don't work and it's just placebo or whatever? No. Where's the primary imbalance? So if the primary imbalance is the energetic system, the meridian system, and you get acupuncture, you're going to see a major improvement. But if the primary imbalance is the musculoskeletal and you do acupuncture, it's going to be a drop in the bucket and it's not going to change it. So our job is to really do that thorough history that we teach you in module 4 and like pinpoint where it is. And if it's outside your scope, obviously you send them off. Module 5. Sorry, I don't remember numbers. She's the trivia person. I'm not. I remember biochemical pathways. That's the limit to my memorization. So module 5. And that's why we do that thorough history. With a few questions, with a few checks, I'm like, it's probably your scalenes, right? There may be an involvement a little bit with carpal tunnel. I didn't do enough testing to know that. It was just the pattern. Usually carpal tunnel is the first 3.5 fingers. So if somebody says, wow, it's this part, but the second half of my finger, wow, my pinky's fine, and this pinky side of my ring finger's fine, you're going, huh. Median nerve, that's a median nerve distribution, and that's what carpal tunnel is. So you don't have to be a chiropractor, you don't have to be an acupuncturist, but if you have enough of the diagnostic skills to be able to pinpoint where you think the major stuff is, you can have a referral partnership with other folks, and you can work on somebody as a team. Make sense?
Yeah, great.
Cool, great. Other questions or comments? Was that helpful to you guys? Yeah? Okay, good. Let's see. Oh, thank you, Susan, for comfrey cream. Can be very helpful for a lot of stuff. Comfrey, you're going to hear a lot of negatives on comfrey. Don't take comfrey. It's got pyrrolidine alkaloids and it can affect your liver. Long-term, high dose, sure. But that's not what you use comfrey for, right? You use it for short term. You use it for bone healing. You use it for musculoskeletal stuff. And the cream certainly is going to be, you know, perfectly fine. Not going to affect their liver. Unless somebody's in a hepatitis state already, then you want to be concerned. You know, just be careful. There's a lot of herbs that have those pyrrolidine alkaloids, by the way. You just have to be careful of them. You don't use them. And they're not like nettles where you just go, hey, take nettles. It's a nutritive herb, right? And then there's the herbs that you have to just be a little bit more careful with. Good. You found the workbook. So look on the chat, Kimberly. Lynn found the book on Amazon. Your geeky thing. If you found something else, I would love to see it. What? Oh, okay. Yeah. Lynn is so good at finding stuff. Did everybody, like, the time it takes her to find stuff, I would have been halfway there. What's this one? Aromatherapy oil from Janine, inhalant and massage therapy oil. And what's that for? What have you used that for, Janine? Pain from herniated disc.
Yeah, so I go to a healing chiropractor. And because my herniated discs are flattening part of my cervical spine or my spine, spinal cord, can't talk. And so he also has a new machine he uses, and he went through all the different points because I've been hit by a train, feels like. So he resets my chakra. He sends, you know, he goes on different points and finds out where my blockages are. And so we end up this last Friday going up my neck, and he did pressure points through the neck. But he goes through my whole body system, all the way down to my ankles this time, because the pain is just becoming unbearable from that. And then all the cytokines, all the imbalances going through my body that I'm trying to fight right now.
Mm-hmm.
And like today is just awful. But for her neck, yeah, a chiropractor getting a healing one, you know, they'll check all the points.
Yeah.
And the acupressure and all that stuff.
It's
great. It affects everything.
Good for, thank you for sharing that. And the other thing I was going to say is just in general, an herb that is super good for nerve pain, Hypericum, right? We think of St. John's wort for, you know, for mental, for depression and all. It's actually nerve regenerative. And what I've even seen it used for botulism, like to prevent, or tetanus, not botulism, tetanus, right? If somebody has a tetanus wound and they are concerned about it, they don't want to get a tetanus shot, you just like pouring a Hypericum in it.
Would that help with neuropathy?
I think it could. I use it topically. I'll get St. John's wort oil. I get that from Herbalist and Alchemist. It's a really beautiful blue, bright red color, pinkish red color. And I use that. I mix it with a little bit of massage oil and I rub it into their areas where they're having some of that. So if you're having nerve root pain, you know, I do it where the nerves are coming out. So I would be putting it like in, you know, a whole in through the neck, but the brachial plexus, especially in here. And then you can also do it down in your wrist because there's nerves close to the surface there.
Okay.
And that can be very helpful.
Great.
One of my favorites. I love neck cracks, Annette said, yes. Hasn't unscrewed yet from Lynn Rose, yes. My children have had them done since they were born. Mine too, obviously. Although my older one only comes when he's really hurt and he'll go, okay, adjust me. And he'll go, oh, wow, that worked really fast. Why don't I do this more often? I'm like, scaredy cat. The other one is like 3 times a day he'd come in and lay on my table because he's always hurting himself. Brandon, I had angina? Brandon, you're 24 years old. What could I remember my whole entire life? Hadn't had any experience in almost 2 years. I'd scare my friends even when it happened. They thought I was having a heart attack. But yeah. So you confirmed that was angina? I mean, that seems kind of unusual for a young person to be having that. Wow. And it could have been, I wonder if it could have been a musculoskeletal thing that you were mistaking for angina. Angina, I don't know what the right way to say it is. Holding a doorway stretch does a lot to help me with that. Lynn Rose. That must be scary. Doorway stretches are amazing. Everybody's conferring with that. Great pose for shoulders and neck. Oh, good. So you click on the link that Susan put up for some poses. Okay, cool. So you got some good stuff in here.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Who else? Anybody else?
Yeah, I actually just wanted to offer up an observation.
Yeah.
Those scalenes is that sometimes handbags, women with handbags, if you look at the alignment of the shoulders, oftentimes you'll see that one shoulder lower than the other, and that will wreak havoc on that whole area.
Yep.
So just something to be aware of, you know, and it might even be what I call doing a little bit of an Ed Sullivan, like taking your shoulders up to your ears and then taking them back just to kind of relieve the tension.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be something as simple as that.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I know so many times my patients would be getting mad at me because I'd make them give up their and get a little backpack, you know, just a little so that it's evenly distributed or something that goes over the shoulder and across. Cause yeah, I see that all the time. Like, oh, which side do you hurt on? Oh, which side is numb? Okay. Let's get you balanced. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good point. Thank you. Yeah. Who else? Anything else? Questions, comments?
I really enjoyed that assessment.
Oh, good.
Yeah. That was cool.
I mean, I tell, you know, I visit these chiropractic things and people don't do a lot of online stuff. They're still doing the old fashioned in the office work. But I always tell them I can do a complete chiropractic assessment over Zoom. You know, I can't adjust you, but I can actually teach you what to do. And I actually had one person get themselves an activator, which is a little chiropractic adjusting tool. And I would have, you know, their partner there with them. And I just like poke here, poke there. I'm even doing muscle testing like that. And they say, okay, I want you to turn around and you put it there. And I'd watch and I go, okay, now pull the trigger. And they could learn to self-adjust. I mean, it's, you can't get everything that way. But there are ways to do that. And then acupressure points, too. You can teach people how to look at that. That's module 34, is the energetics. I can't remember. One of those. One of those. 35, maybe. I think it's the one that's that had some errors and it's not open yet. They were fixing. Yeah.
Okay. Also, but, I'm wondering, I noticed this as a pattern every year in the spring. And I don't know if it's because it's liver season. I sort of envision how the ground is sort of energy is swelling up from the ground into the plants so that the plants can extend and, you know, grow and blossom. And, what I find is that my trouble spot, which is my medial meniscus, will bother me in the spring. It's just the most bizarre thing, and it's prime gardening season, so that's a real gugger for me with an irritated knee. And it's also the time of year that my teacher teaches Padmasana, which is lotus pose, right? So it's really, I have to work very skillfully with my knee in the spring. But do you know anything about that? Like, is there something about springtime in the body? Is it liver that kind of, you know, gets things swelled up and you're feeling it more than usual?
I mean, that could be part of it, certainly. And the thought that came to me is out, you know, blooming and the new blooms and people start to get allergy type symptoms and there's some inflammation that comes. And maybe you don't have overt allergy symptoms, but your body's still going, oh, there's more pollens, there's more stuff and I've got to work harder. And whenever that happens, it builds up the level of inflammation to try to get rid of that, and that may activate the knee. So a couple of things that I think you can try for the knee. First of all, I would increase levels of turmeric and ginger and maybe try some boswellia or something like that that are, you know, good natural and increase your vitamin C. Mm-hmm. But the other thing, and this is an old Chinese medicine thing, they would do it with, what do they call it? Moxibustion. You know, you're not going to do moxibustion on yourself or the acupuncture, but basically get ginger and you slice it as thin as you can, like a mandolin would slice it really, really thin. Mm-hmm. And then you lay it over the area, and especially they use it for knees, and then you put heat over it. Now they would do it and stick a needle in, you know, whatever that gallbladder 9 or something and stomach 36 and a whole bunch of the points around the knee. And then put the moxa and light the needles. But the heat over it works really well as well. So okay. That might be something to try.
Okay.
Like a ginger compress
over
that knee. And do it in anticipation, right? If you know that it's starting to feel a little twinge, don't wait for it to get full blown and just try to really work with it.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I can get my friend to do the moxa for me.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Woohoo. I know one person in my class, when I learned that technique, she said, you know, that her mom had 20, 30 years of knee pain, and an acupuncturist did that technique once, and her knee pain went away once.
Wow.
Right. So you never know, right?
Yeah.
No promises, but yeah, give it a try. Give it a try. Cool. Anybody else? No? Yes, go ahead, Susan.
On that note, on the allergy note, I've been having to mow my yard. And I've noticed that my allergies flare up right after I mow, which I kind of, I've got grass allergies, and it's just what it is. So instead of, years back, I would take, you know, allergy medicine, but obviously I'm not doing that anymore and haven't done that in a while. So I was using standard process. They've got a, I forget the name of it, but they have a complex for allergies. But I got to thinking with your conversation about histamines. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, that's what it is. So I've been playing with the quercetin. Mm-hmm.
Quercetin, yeah.
And I'm blown away with how well it's working. So my question is, how much and how often
Yeah.
And I take that because this was just like, I was experimenting with it. Like I was,
A usually prescribed dose is 500 milligrams three times a day.
500.
Whenever you've got a dose like that, you can certainly go up from that and you might find a lower effective dose than that. But that's kind of a middle ground of 500 three times a day. Bourne has a spray, you know, a nasal spray that has quercetin in it. Works really well.
Okay.
Oh, you know what other spray works really well? This, I was shocked at this. I use a neti pot and I'd read about as Clears. Clears stuff that you put in the neti pot and it had salt and baking, a couple of things, C-K-X-L-E-R. And so I'd gotten it and it came with a little mini sample of their nasal spray and I had it in my bag and I was traveling and a friend of mine said, oh, I was up all night with my allergies and my nose is running. I said, well, I have this nasal spray. You want to try it? She tried it. She comes running out of the room like, I don't know, 20 minutes later. She goes, what is this stuff? This is the best stuff ever. This cleared up my nose. I said, here, take it. You can have it. And then she's been uses it all the time. And it's really just saline. I think I forget what else it has in it.
And it's called what?
X-L-E-A-R.
Isn't it xylitol?
Xylitol, that's it. It's xylitol and salt. Yeah.
I used that for many years with success.
Yes, you have. Great. Yes, it's xylitol. That's it. Thank you.
But then I had people telling me to be careful with it because it could affect your sense of smell.
In what way? What's the mechanism?
I don't know.
So here's my admonition to you, my suggestion to you, to all of you, when your friends, who are usually lay people, right, say to you, oh, well, I heard this causes that. Oh, great. I'd love to read about that. Give me a link. I wonder what the mechanism is. Always want to know what's the mechanism. What's it doing? Maybe it's drying the nose out, right? Maybe you don't want to do it too much. Like you just want to find out the mechanism. And when people say that all the time, but people say that about everything. Oh yeah, don't eat too much of that because it'll cause this. Don't drink that because it'll cause that. Don't take this because it'll cause that. Because someone somewhere had a reaction. Now, if it's a scientifically based reaction and there was a study and there were X number of people and, you know, it was controlled, sure, you want to pay attention to it. But you always want to ask what's the mechanism and try to figure out what the mechanism is. Because when you can understand the mechanism of action of a drug or an adverse reaction or an herb, then you can, when someone says, well, I can't take that particular thing, when you understand the mechanism of action, you can look for something that acts similarly, right? Or if they say, whoa, that thing just doesn't work for me at all, right? If somebody tries for depression and they take an SSRI and they get suicidal, right? Well, that's not a good example because that's what SSRIs do. But that's a talk for another day. But if they say, well, every time I take an SSRI, it caused me to get this way, whatever this reaction is, you want to look at, okay, so when they reuptake the serotonin, that increase in serotonin, what can it be causing? Like what is going on with that? And what can happen is it can be depleting dopamine. So there's ways that when you understand what drugs work for them and what drugs don't, that you can figure out what the mechanism is going on for their symptoms. Does that make sense? I just love looking at that stuff. And that's the way we figured out a bunch of cool stuff. I have a chart that I wanted to give you guys a copy of, and I'm gonna load it up, but I think I have it in Lynn's thing. Remember how a lot of times we are talking about iron, where's Lynn, and how iron and ferritin, and sometimes people have low iron and high ferritin, you're going, huh? What's up with that, right? Because if they have high ferritin and they have high stores, it's not being put into the bloodstream and vice versa. So there was a really cool chart that somebody gave me last weekend. I can't find Lynn. Why am I not seeing Lynn? I don't know. There we go. And I sent it to Lynn. I was like, Lynn, this chart. I love this chart. I like right in the middle of doing it from my cell phone. Let me see. See if I can find it. Because I think we're going to add it to the blood chemistry. And actually, I'm going to use it in the blood chemistry, advanced blood chemistry, when I finish those slides and put them up. And superfood. Okay, we're almost there. It was on Sunday. Okay, I still can't find it. Lynn, if you can find it in your Skype. Can't find it. I'm going back and back. Ah, here we are. Good chart. Okay, let me see if I can copy it and get the link to it. Here we go. How do I do that? Copy. Oh, I don't know if I'll be able to do this here because I don't know if it allows. Paste. No. All right. Lynn, if we can save that chart, like just save it to a PDF or something. I don't know what form it's in. Then we can load up a link to it. We'll get it to you. But it's a really cool chart about the various components of an iron and anemia panel and when they're high, low. And it talks about like the high ferritin. And sometimes when the iron is low, but the ferritin is high, it's a protective mechanism that the body's trying to keep the iron from going too high because of oxidative stress. And it's going to feed some bugs and bacteria. And so it's a natural thing that the body's doing. And when it goes the other way, there's some inflammation that the body's trying to handle. And that's with the ferritin. Oh, there, she did it. How did you do that so quickly? Magic fingers. There you go. So you can download that chart and add it to your notes from the blood chemistry.
I have a question about high iron.
Yeah.
So, you know, my father's tested high in iron, and we've been able to bring it down, but I'm thinking that it's from bringing inflammation down. But how would you bring someone's iron down?
The medical way is to bloodlet, like get them to donate blood. But how would you get it down? Well, you want to address the cause, right? So you first want to find out why is it high. Is it high because of there's some iron in the water supply? We found out we had one person in ERC that had high iron, and then she discovered her husband had high iron. She goes, okay, this must be something in our water supply, in our soil. So she started doing all this testing and recalled that she had started to cook with iron cookware.
Right.
And as soon as she stopped cooking with the iron cookware, their both irons went back down. But it could be a water contaminant. It could be something in the pipes. So you want to look at why, right? Is he taking supplements? Of course, you want to stop it. Eating high levels of, like, really high levels of red meat. It's not just like a little bit more than he should. But some people that just eat, you know, they don't eat anything but, like, there's one lady, because I swear I don't know what else she's eating. She must just be eating meat all day. Because everything we mentioned to her, well, I can't eat that. No, I can't eat that. No, I can't eat that. I'm like, what the heck do you eat? Like, what's left to eat? So, but how do you bring it down? Got to look at why it's up, and you got to look at the mechanism. Is ferritin high as well, right? If the ferritin's high as well, you got to also consider, does he have hemochromatosis or mild form of hemochromatosis?
Okay.
Right? So if both of them are high, but if the iron's super high, but the ferritin is low, then you want to look at inflammatory condition. Where's this?
Yeah, the ferritin was normal.
The ferritin was normal.
It was normal.
Let's see what this chart says.
I had a feeling that it was inflammatory.
Yeah, it's most likely.
He's a sugar addict. He eats sugar, white bread, red meat, you know. Hello?
Yeah, it's oxidative, right? It's an oxidative stress when the iron is high, and it'll feed the bugs, right? So it depletes the immune system because now these bugs are all getting real excited because they can, they have stuff to share. Mm-hmm. Let me just save this here. This is ferritin chart. Oh.
That's a very cool chart.
Yeah, isn't it? Oh, I'm still spinning. Am I frozen? Was I frozen? As I tried to save this, I'm not going to do this. I hit save and it didn't save. It just spun.
Yeah, so. You seem to I wasn't sure if you were just being really still for a moment there.
Oh, no. I was talking away. You know, no? If I'm awake, I'm talking. So rare for me to not. So it is a cool chart. And, you know, it just gives some extra insights into some of that. Because nobody was writing about it. Lynn and I would look and look and look for the high ferret and low iron. Low ferret and high iron, and, you know, trying to figure it out. And inflammation was one. We found melatonin to be involved when the iron is high and the ferritin is low. So that's a possibility for your dad, that if melatonin is low, melatonin is a cofactor for converting there's two different forms, and it has to be oxidized or reduced to be converted into ferritin. And, the melatonin was important for that. So you can look at his melatonin levels as well. And I've never seen anything written that says give person melatonin and bring their iron down. But actually that happened to Laura. Is Laura on? Laura Ricci, because we were following her. And it was when she and I were trying to figure it out on a call. We're looking at her labs, and we just started doing some research. Melatonin, she goes, oh, I just got back my biohealth test and my melatonin's low. And I just started it. Great. Let's see what happens. And her iron did start to come down. So that could be a possibility too. Does he have trouble sleeping? No.
No, I think it's inflammation.
Well, you got to, you know, the diet, obviously. You can work on herbs and stuff. If you're not going to get anywhere, at least get him some ginger, turmeric, Boswellia. Does he have any gut issues? Boswellia is really good.
He's had C. diff twice.
Yeah, Boswellia. Those are good. Boswellia tends to be really good for gut inflammation. I've had good results with people with Crohn's and ulcerative colitis to get that inflammation down.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Anything else? Who else? Okay. So you iron and insulin modulate each other. Yeah, that's true. I have a whole bunch of notes that I'm going to go through on my long airplane ride to organize my notes from this conference this weekend. Just a few little clinical pearls like that, you know what I mean? That really stood out for me. They didn't stand out enough for me to remember them, but I just remember that they're there because it all starts to blend together. I take notes and then I have to go back and look at it. You said there was Lynn, you said there was somebody had an oat test. I go through it and we send her the recording. Somebody who's not in the program.
Okay. And some of you may know Mona. She's in IRSPT and CMDS, and she was at Shine last year. And so she was asking me some questions, and I said, oh, don't bring it to INE, bring it to here, because then we can all see it and learn. And then
you didn't remember that she wasn't in this program.
She's not in NEPT. So anyway, I have it all uploaded in a Dropbox, if that helps you out.
Yeah, what if I do that? I'll just stop the recording, start it again, and then we can just give her the recording. Because I just feel like this is our sacred space for just our members, you know? To bring somebody else in would be, I think, it doesn't feel right. But I'm happy to go through it because everybody else will learn when I go through an oat test, right?
So let me, let's see.
Okay. But I thought we went over her oat test a couple of weeks ago.
No, this is.
Or her daughter's?
Yeah.
Okay.
Here, I'll put
the link. She's got she's got a daughter with Rett syndrome. And Rett's it's one of the spectrum.
Among other things.
Among other things. And she has this just really bad gut stuff. I mean, she showed a picture on the, on the INE, a little video of like, it looks like actually an organism. Is she pregnant? I mean, her belly was this way. You could see her peristalsis. It was that bad. And, you know, she's nonverbal. So it's hard for her. She has to read her face and see when she's in pain. So she's been trying to help her daughter.
This is how many of us have gotten here. So she's been working on her daughter, discovered things about herself. So she's learning these things through here. And now actually this, I believe, is her first paying client.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Great for her.
So she wanted to take the pieces out. So what you're seeing are snapshots because she couldn't figure out how to
white out the name.
White out the name. So, mm-hmm.
A simple way to do that for those of you who want to do it is if you just print the thing out, you take a piece of white tape, you put it over the person's name, and then you take a picture on your phone, and then you upload your pictures. That's a way to do it.
Well, I think that's what she did.
Okay, good. All right, so put it up. Give me the link. And
I put it in the your Skype. Skype.
Okay.
It's the Dropbox.
Wait, it's in Dropbox? Oh, well, if it's in Dropbox, just tell me where it is in Dropbox. I'll go open it up on my computer.
Okay. So it's in client folders, INE Open Office Hours.
Open Office Hours.
4/18/2018.
Yep.
And she's the only one there.
All right. Got it. Mona Mervin.
Yep.
Oh, pages and pages. Okay, she's got them all on separate pages. So she did do that. All right, I'll just open them all. And then I'll be able to open. All right, I'll open them all. And then I will just share them on the screen. And for us, it will just look like it's just going to be out of order. Ah, okay, let me share screen. Let me get to the front. There's Fungal. They're just not in the right order. That's okay. All right. So oat test, most of you have seen me do an oat test on one of these calls. We have a ton of them. And if you go back through the old recordings, there's so many of them on the case studies that we've done a lot of oat tests. Oh, what's happening to my iPad? Just did some crazy thing. All right, so share screen. And here we go. So the first page. Let me see if I can make this bigger because it's really tiny. I'll make a full screen out of it. And then I'll do this. And all right, there's a way to make them bigger. Here we go. Okay. Can you see it? Looking good? Okay, so first page is microbial stuff. The first set of markers is yeast and fungal. The second set is bacterial. The third is Clostridia. So as far as this is concerned, she's got high arabinose and high tricarboxylic. So these are particular yeast and fungal markers. So she's going to have to do some work with yeast, getting yeast under control. Think about the oat. It doesn't test normal flora. So we always have to keep in mind you want to have a balance of normal flora, but we don't know exactly what's out of balance. And a lot of times when we run a stool test, we see what exactly is out of balance. But I will say that 4 out of 5 times you're going to see low bifidus. So you can't go wrong with supplementing bifidus. If you're concerned that somebody has SIBO, be careful about supplementing acidophilus because it can not make it all the way down and cause them to bloat. I would start with bifidus as a replacement for the normal flora. And then you can gradually increase and start with, once you've gotten them stable for a little bit, then you can start to increase the lacto. But I'm always careful about what I supplement if I don't know too much about what's really going on in there. She's got some bacterial, not much, just a minor increase. However, a lot of times you'll see markers on here before you'll see them on the stool because the stool is having to culture and it has to do with the quantity and how well the culture is and the conditions under which it moves through. So this gives you a subtle indication of that there is some bacterial as well as the yeast overgrowth. You can try an approach that's multifaceted with somebody like this, like a biocidin. I like biocidin because you can get drops and you can just start with 1 drop, then 2 drop, then 3 drop, then 4 drop, then 5 drop. Whereas if you get some of the other things like there's something called tricyclin, which I like a lot from allergy research, but it's a capsule and it's got the exact proportional amount of that you can't change of the various things. So when you can do this when you can do it separately is good, but if you wanted to do something together, you can do like a biocidin can help with both of these, but it's really just looking into CMDS, which she's in, and going ahead and getting this piece taken care of. Let me see. So she does have a marker for Clostridia. couple of them. This one's super high, the HPA, and the 4-creosol. There are certain types of probiotics that will be helpful with Clostridia. There's one particular brand that has been tested a lot with Clostridia and works. I'm not 100% comfortable with all the other ingredients in it. I think it might have whey. It might have some, I don't know. It has some other stuff in it. It's that, what's that one, Lynn, called? I always forget the name of it because I don't use it. But that's the one that whenever you call Great Plains and they go through a lab with you, they'll say, oh yeah, get the, oh, what's it called? Culturelle. But it's that particular rhabanose, R-H-A-B-O-S. It's a lacto species, but it's the RH. I can't remember exactly how to say it or spell it, but that's this particular strain that's in the Culturelle that, and Lynn made a face at it too. So you don't like it either, the Culturelle. But yeah, I think that looking at these three, so she's definitely got some gut dysbiosis that needs to be addressed because nothing else is going to get better until she addresses the gut dysbiosis. All right. So the next page. Okay. How do I get to the next page? Did it open this in five different? Oh, what a pain. Let me get rid of this. Why? Huh, I can't figure out how to move it. Oh, there. Previous. So she has them backwards.
And I know that I asked her a couple of questions. It is an older man that, and he has been in the hospital. So things like C. diff are...
Mm-hmm. That's a common where you pick that up. Yeah. What are the main complaints? Did she say? No, I can't get here. Okay, good.
Well, she did say because of the Clostridium markers, he has no diarrhea. He doesn't have any tenderness or bloating. And so she was curious what other things to ask him about as far as symptomology signs.
You know, a lot of times there's gut dysbiosis and there's no gut sign.
That's what I told her too. So it's good. I'm glad you said that.
The whole body. And so what's his chief complaint? Like what's he seeing her for?
It was nothing to do with gut.
Yeah, I had a feeling that, but you know.
Yeah, no, I can't remember now.
Right? She told me, but yeah, that's okay.
Because we started talking about this.
Yeah. I can't figure out now where did that thing, this thing, it's like the controls disappear. There was a control up here that let me make it bigger, but I can't seem to make it bigger. So let me try this. Okay. Well, that's a little bigger. Okay. So we have the oxalate markers slightly high on oxalic, not uncommon with people with gut issues and leaky gut. It's not off the charts. And I wouldn't say based on seeing some of this that he doesn't have like, oh my God, this is a real super sensitive person for oxalate and they have to watch for it. But he does have some oxalates in there. So I'd be asking him questions about kidney function and kidney stones and that kind of stuff. Does he see crystal in the urine? If it was a woman, I'd ask about vulvodynia, you know, pain in the vulva area, which is very common with high oxalates. I'd ask about a history of kidney stones. We've got the so now we have the Krebs cycle. So we've got the glycolysis and we've got the Krebs cycle itself. So all the stuff is in the mitochondria. He's got a lot of things off in this cycle. And this is how I would approach it because I don't want to spend the time today and pull out the charts and start looking at it. The way I would analyze this is I would take your Krebs cycle, right? It's a cycle. And you're going to look, you'll see all of these different substrates, succinate, fumarate, malate, and they're getting converted from one to the next, to the next, to the next. When I see any of them high, I'm looking at what about the pathway that goes from the previous one to it. So assuming this is the order, I don't have it memorized, but you have it in module 2, the chart, and all the substrates. You'd look at, okay, so succinate to fumarate, wow, fumarates, that, well, it's pretty even, but fumarate to malate is slow. Malate to oxaloglutarate is high. So you want to look at the pathway. This, in this particular case, he's got most of these high. So to me, it seems like there's a lot of missing cofactors in here. I would start with general Bs. I would just start with a good B because you've got B niacin, you've got riboflavin, NAD, FAD, you've got B6, and then I would do a multi-mineral as well. So I would really, this guy's, he's been in the hospital. I don't know what his diet's like. If he's, you know, some neighbor or friend or family member of hers, you know, that referred, it's likely they're on a standard diet, right? And so they probably are low in micronutrients. So I would start with a good B complex and a micro mineral supplement to get there because you've got magnesium, you've got selenium, all these different factors that are important in moving that Krebs cycle forward. I would also, no, they're high, so never mind. Yeah. It's a little high in pyruvate. Yeah, I would just support. It's too many high. There's general mitochondrial support, and a lot of times they have NADH in it. There's B complex in it. There's sometimes some amino acids in it. So that's what I would be looking at here. Either a combination of the B vitamins with the minerals, and also you can look at one of those like ATP fuel, and there's a bunch of different ones that have the nutrients, but he's got to get this moving. His Krebs cycle is like drawn to a halt. And, oh yeah. Yeah, the amino acid metabolites as well. Yeah, this whole Krebs cycle. He just needs Krebs cycle support big time. And it's not like one. If there were one or two, you'd be able to pick out a very specific nutrient by pulling out that chart. But this is like, he just needs total Krebs cycle support. Neurotransmitters, let's see. Actually, it doesn't look bad. This doesn't look bad at all. The quinolinic and chironic are a little bit on the high side. So these are downstream metabolites of tryptophan. This really great talk about the chironic cycle and relationship to serotonin. And a lot of times what we're right away wanting to push is let's give them more tryptophan, right? Give him tryptophan so he can make more serotonins because when these are high, let me show you the pathway. When these are high, then we can find, sorry, this is driving me nutty. There it is. I have to keep find the picture of, the nerve vesicle. All right. So here we are up here. We have tryptophan. Our preferred cycle is to take it down to serotonin and then melatonin, right? That's our preferred pathway. But what he's got is an elevation of the quinolinic, okay? And the chironate is in there too. Why am I not seeing it? This isn't a full pathway. I'll just show you where that pathway is. But chironic is one as well. So what's happening is if you give him more tryptophan, you run the risk of these going higher. Now, they're not super high where they're going to be in a scary toxic level, but these are neurotoxins when they get high. So we don't want to just give this guy tryptophan to increase that. We want to get down this pathway more. So we're going to push him down this pathway more. We can give him 5-HTP, and that'll get converted down to more serotonin, but it's still not solving the problem of why is it going down this way. Right? What are some of the cofactors that are required? And I can't read this because it's too small. And I can't, there it is. Now I see the zoom. There we go. Can see it? Okay, let me scroll it. There we go. All right, so the quinolic is high. It's a neurotoxin, right? So we don't want that to go up. It's already high. And if we just give them 5-HTP, we're supporting this, but we're not lowering the tryptophan, right? And then he's still going to be producing the quinolinic. So we have to find out why is he going down that pathway? Well, when the immune system is stimulated, when there's stress and when there's infection, get what did we find? We found gut infection. it's going to push down this pathway. So what this is pointing to is, yeah, you can temporarily, if this guy has some depression and some signs of low serotonin, sleep disturbances, signs of melatonin deficiency, then we'd give him some 5-HTP as a Band-Aid, right? But what we really want to do is fix the underlying, which is the immune system, his stress, and his gut infections. Does that make sense? So root cause is what we found right away, which was this quinolinic is going high because of these other infections. Make sense? And then the cortisol has an impact. I'll find those other charts because I have them in my notes, and they have a really like a big chart of this, which shows all the different factors and how cortisol plays in and all that. And I'll share that with you guys. Okay, so let's go back. I can. I think I have to shrink it again to get it back. This is all in, what is this in? What are these like? Are these JPEGs or are these? Yeah, they're JPEGs. So it's really hard to look at JPEGs versus PDFs. So that's what's driving me nutty. Okay, so let me see if I can, there we go. I keep having to change views to be able to get these things. So let's go back. Let me see if I can do this. Okay, good. Where were we? We're on this page. All right, so neurotransmitters. So it's the serotonin pathways. So she'd be asking, does this guy have symptoms of serotonin deficiency, right? We have in our history taking, we have a neurotransmitter, like questions so that you get a general idea of which neurotransmitter may be out of balance. And my feeling is that he probably has some sort of serotonin. Now, serotonin, guess what? Where's most of the serotonin made? In the brain or the gut? The gut, right? All right. So addressing his gut is going to address his serotonin levels as well, right? So this, a lot of these pathways, a lot of what you find on your organic acid is going to shoot you back to stress and gut dysfunction. Right? But it gives you very specific things that you can do to help support this person, but you still have to get to the root cause. My biggest complaint, and I was actually having a conversation with one of the speakers over the weekend at the seminar I was at, and I said, you know, one of the biggest things I have is that everybody's looking for what do you take? What do you take? He goes, yeah, he consults a lot with practitioners who bring their tough cases. And he goes, okay, if you can't figure this out, we've missed something. You've missed a stressor. You've missed something going on. And he goes, and he'll start to explain this. What about this? And they'll answer the question, but what supplement should I give them? What about this? What supplement should I give them? Right? So it's that mindset of run an oat test. What supplements should I give the person? And let's see if they get better after 3 months. But that's not really what it's about. This will tell us what the imbalances are and can give us some good short-term solutions. And it will give us an idea of what the root cause is. But we've got to address the root cause. We can't just give this guy B vitamins and tryptophan or even 5-HTP and give him a Krebs cycle support and give him some gut repair stuff without really addressing what's causing all this, right? What's the underlying? Okay, so next page would be glutathione. These markers look pretty good. Again, I gotta get this. And now there we go. It's insanity, this interface. There we go. Okay. All right. Ugh. Okay, that's better, right? So it's the hydroxy. Okay, so we want to look at, for these kind of things, GI bacteria will cause an elevation of the hippuric acid, the hydroxyhippuric, wherever people come up with these names, they're too hard to say. Gut bacteria. Is this person taking a lot of aspirin? If this is an older guy, right, and he's a standard American person, he's probably popping the little packets in his coffee, right? The little artificial sugar, the aspartame stuff into his coffee. So those are the questions that you want to ask. So it comes up, it gives you a lot of questions. Do you drink coffee? Do you put those little packets of artificial sweetener in it? Do you drink Diet Coke? Right? Do you eat the little candies, the diabetic-friendly candies, right, with aspartame in them? And then we know he has the gut stuff and asking about salicylates, Is he taking aspirin or white willow bark, quite frankly, as well? White willow bark is a natural form of salicylate. The amino acids we generally look at for high, the low ones don't really indicate that the person has a low amount of that particular amino acid. When it's high, we look for like inborn errors of metabolism or pathway problems. So I don't see anything majorly on mandelic acid. I'm not remembering exactly what that is, but we can look it up on that list, on the list that they give you at the end. Kind of low in phosphorus. So I mean, you know, again, she said he's older. I don't know how old he is. If Mona is in her 30s or 40s, she's probably 40s.
He's in his 70s.
In his 70s. Okay. Some people think older means you're in your 50s. And, you know, for those of you in your 20s and call us.
That's why I said he's not old. He's just older.
Older. Yeah. So, you know, the bones start to break down. So you want to look at that. You also want to look at vitamin D levels when you see low on the phosphoric acid. Okay, now I have to shrink it and then go that way. And this was, that's the explanation of the report in general. That's the, okay, where'd the vitamin one go? Let me see what they say. Do you remember what the number was on that mandelic acid? Now I figured out I could just do it this way. Okay, so this is the page for the, they give good definitions. I've learned a lot of it from here. I've also learned a lot of it by calling the company doing interpretations with them. And with the high oxalates, we do want to be careful that he's getting enough magnesium and calcium because the oxalates will draw it out. Okay. We went that.
And that Wait. Said nutritional markers start at 50. And Sequoia said 68. So I'm wondering if that wasn't.
Oh, you know what? This is out of order, so I can't. Okay. Come on, baby. Let me go. I don't know what it takes to get those. Sometimes I get them. Yes, it's stuck. Won't move now. Sometimes when I do that, I get it back. I do that. I get it back. There it comes. I don't like this interface. All right. The oxalic, oxalates, the creosol. Yeah, I don't see it. Where's the vitamin? Ah, here's the vitamin page. Okay. That's the one we missed. I don't see that explanation page. I'm finding this really hard to read, so. Let's finish with this. Let me make it bigger. Folate metabolism looks okay. Ketones, you know, it depends on which they are. 4-hydroxybutyrate, a lot of our people, you know, you're going to see elevations in ketones because they're deliberately doing a mild ketogenic diet or a severe ketogenic diet. But in his case, he's got the succinate and the subaric. And again, I have to look each of these up each time because I don't remember exactly the flow. And we can see if we can find that page. The B12 methylmalonic acid looks good. B6 is on the low side. B5 is on the high side. Sometimes if they're taking these, if they're taking the vitamin, you see it. But it's interesting that he's got high level of pantothenic acid. So I'd want to ask if he's taking it, especially since the Krebs cycle indicates that the B vitamins are probably low. Low ascorbic acid. So that would be something to be considering. Riboflavin. When the riboflavin number is high, it means it's low. So getting back to what we talked about before, FAD is a riboflavin, flavonine dinucleotide. And that, so the riboflavin is definitely a good indication that it's low. CoQ10, right? That's another one. I'd be asking, is this guy on statins? That's another question right away that comes to mind. Yeah, a lot of people are low in CoQ10, but a lot of folks in the 70s are on statins, and statins deplete CoQ10. So CoQ10 would be something to be looking at supplementing with this person. Glutathione, precursor, the NAC. NAC levels look up. So I'd be asking them, like, what supplements are they on to see if some of these are artificially high because he's taking it, or is he making more of it because of some stress situation? And biotin is okay. So that's that. Let's see if we can find the sheet. Okay. All right. Let's see if we, there's it. High mandelic acid. This is the one we were looking for. Hydroxyapuric. So that one we talked about. The mandelic acid. So does this guy drink coffee from styrofoam cups? Right? If he's in the, so a lot of times it's high because they're exposed to styrofoam and the styrofoam leaches from those, the coffee cups. If he's in the hospital, right? They're probably feeding him everything from some kind of styrofoam garbage stuff. Let's see. And ascorbic acid, right? Low ascorbic acid, they're mentioning here too. And that we saw that being verified by the ascorbic acid numbers. That's it. That's all I have. Anybody else who on that wants to take a stab at anything else in here that they've saw that, you know, Sequoia's done a bunch of these, and who else is on that might have done some of these? Want to add anything, anybody? And I forgot to stop the recorder and then start it again. So we don't have a separate recording of this. Let's have to pull it out. If you remember approximately when. Okay, anybody else? Questions, comments? Was that helpful? Interesting. The more you see those, the better you feel about doing them. I have done a lot of them and I still feel like I have to look stuff up, but it's understanding and really thinking about pathways. And whenever you're stuck on something, you're not sure why they have a high or a low, is to do some research and find a picture of the biochemical pathway and see what's stuck, where they stuck. But that's what I love about it, because it takes you from, oh, well, this is high, but this is low. Wow, it means definitely that there's a stuck here, right? That this isn't getting converted to here. And what's the cofactor? And the picture that we have in module 2 has the cofactors in there as well. So it's not just about giving them something to give them more energy or stimulating them, you know? Yeah, go ahead, Susan. There you go.
Question on the oat test. Since you were looking at that and you had a lot of questions as to whether the numbers were a reflection of things he was taking, would it be recommended to go off supplements prior to an oat test to see what your body's really doing? Or
it depends on your purpose, right? If somebody comes in to see you and they're on a ton of supplements, you didn't put them on and you don't know if it's working, they're spending a lot of money, one of their complaints is, holy cow. Then yeah, take them off and then run.
Like how long?
A few weeks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, maybe a week. It depends, but okay. Usually a couple of weeks, couple to 3 weeks. But if the purpose is you just put them on some supplements and you want to see how it's working, then you would leave them on it. If they said they've been on these supplements and ever since they started them, it's so much better. Then you don't want to take them off of them. Right. But they go, I don't know. I got the shopping bag full of stuff and I read this here and read that there. And this person gave me that. And you go, okay, go off of all of it. Let's see what your body's doing. And you may make a clinical judgment like, no, you have this histamine response. We're not going to take you off vitamin B, you know, whatever. Or you have these menstrual cramps and we're not going to take you off B6. So you make a judgment, but the stuff where you're like, I don't know if this is doing any good, you can take them off of.
Cool. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah. Sequoia. Hi. Oops. Unmute. There you go.
I don't have anything to add. I mean, I think you covered it pretty well. I put a couple of comments in the chat. Otherwise, Yeah.
That's okay. Well, I didn't see them. What, you want to mention what they were?
Yeah, I just said the high quinolinic indicates inflammation, especially the brain.
Yeah.
And Janine put in yes, and it relates to bacteria traveling to the brain.
Yep.
By macrophages, and I also put in also high quinolinic can be found in arthritis. So that was about it. Just...
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, you always want to find out why, right? Because
yeah.
It's just...
Yeah, I'm like you. I like it to know why. So if
why is it happening? Yeah.
I do the research to find
out. You do the research, you pull it up, you start to look, you ask lots of questions. Yeah. Like, okay, why is this going down that pathway? And I will share those slides because there's some really good in-depth research on that whole quinolinic chironate pathway that I hadn't seen before and really marking the cofactors at each step. And it's always hard to find those charts that mark the cofactor at each step. So it's a good one to print out and have it, you know. I keep saying it, print them out and laminate them. And I have them somewhere and I have to pull them out and put them in my book so they're handy. So I don't look for them each time, but it's helpful.
Okay. Yeah, I like that chart on the iron because I've been, I think everybody I'm working with, which is kind of interesting, has an iron problem of some sort.
Wow.
And I think, I like that chart because I've done quite a lot of research and I have a lot of references that I've filed in my little folder here. So, I've come across something similar to what you've got there, but not in chart.
Mm-hmm. I love charts because, you know, give clients, okay. Right? It just simplifies the research process. I've got a few more thyroid charts as well that I'm going to pull out. I got a lot of notes to go through. Each of the speakers was limited by the conference director to 90 slides each because that was what was going to fit on the little jump drive that they gave us. And every single one of them got up and well, I couldn't keep to 90 slides. So if you want the rest of my slides, send me an email. And that was everybody. Like nobody could stick to 90 slides. And they're very geeky, so they're very detailed. They're not appropriate slides from a presentation geek here. They're appropriate as reference materials, right? Because you're sitting there going, and then you're missing what he's saying because you're trying to read this in-depth chart and that you miss the actual practical pieces of it. So, but I will go through that and pull some out that I think would be useful. And I actually asked one of them permission, said, you know, can I use some of this? I'd love to use some of this in our program. And, you know, of course I'll give you credit. He goes, oh yeah, no problem. So that was good. Yeah. Okay.
I'm wondering if there's a way to get quick reference guides for the O test or for the Dutch test, you know, some sheets that sort of.
Well, you get it in the samples, right? So if you go to the O test page, we have several sample reports and you see all that. And in the O test module, I have taken the pieces from those reports and made slides out of them and I describe them.
Okay.
So I don't know if you've been through the OAT test module.
No, not yet.
Yeah.
But the pathways as well?
It looks at the pathways as well.
Yeah, it's the ATM.
No, that's the only part of it. That's only the gut part. That's part of CMDS.
Right.
That's only the gut part of the OAT test, very specifically. In the OAT module, it's everything.
Right.
Yeah. I specifically cut that out and I gave it as a bonus in CMDS, just analyzing that one page. And that's all that is. And it's a lot. It takes a long time to describe it. And I described every single one of them in detail. So
that's
it's
cool.
Worth watching. But on the OAT test, it goes into much more detail about the rest of it. And I'm going to be adding more on the Dutch test. The Dutch test, I'm adding a module to the program because the Dutch test hasn't been around that long. So we've got a lot of these kind of calls where we know your Dutches, and I've assigned somebody to go back through all those calls and pull out those pieces, you know, designate from 30 minutes to 45 minutes we talk Dutch. So we can pull all those out. So in this Dutch module, we can just have it all right there that says Dutch cases. And then you can go through and learn from there. And that's the best way to learn. Yeah. The Dutch test does have some really good videos on their site. So if you go to Precision Analytics, their videos are really good.
And their pathway charts, very helpful.
Charts are very helpful. Yep. Yep. Yeah. Susan.
So what are the pros and cons and the differences between the Dutch and the 24-hour urine?
They're very similar. The Meridian Valley 24-hour urine versus the Dutch. Convenience on the patient part is a big thing. Compliance. You know, carrying around a jug and making sure you collect your urine for 24 hours, a lot of people don't want to do it. You got to pee, and you just have to go into the bathroom and hold it between your legs and go, psh, done, right? And you do that 4 times a day. So that's a big piece of it is compliance. The other piece is that the Dutch does a little bit more detail on hi, Cassidy. Scott will get the door. Times it. I think I got to go. So the Dutch test will give you really good detail on the metabolites with the cortisol, and it gives you the cortisol rhythm. The 24-hour just gives you one marker for the cortisol and the TEA and all those kind of metabolites. It just gives you the one. It doesn't give you the cortisone, the cortisol, the metabolized, the free. So much more detailed, much, much better. And then what else does it give you? Oh, and now the Dutch gives you like 10 of the organic acid markers.
Oh, cool.
So they give you methylmalonic acid, right? Instead of having to pay $150 just for a methylmalonic acid, you get it as part of the Dutch test. It gives you melatonin. It gives you an oxidative stress marker. They show you the pathways. They show you, well, they do that on the Meridian Valley one as well. The only thing that the Dutch doesn't do that the Meridian Valley does is growth hormone. They do growth hormone. I've seen one or two cases where the growth hormone was way over the top too high. Okay. All right.
Yep.
Good. All right. We're going to go. Thank you so much, guys. I'll see you in a couple of weeks. I'll see some of you in person in a couple of weeks. I'll be on calls in a couple of weeks after that. I wish you guys could all come, but I'm really looking forward to it.
Because one viaggio.
What's that?
Buon viaggio. Have a safe
Buon viaggio. Yeah. You've been to Italy, so you know it's a cool place. So I'm looking forward to it.
I live there, and you'll find some very good vegetables there this time of year.
Yeah. My son is saying, I can't wait to take you to all these great restaurants. So he has this Italian, like it's a wine bar Italian place that they make cashew cheese.
Ah.
Like, fermented vegan cheeses. It's a vegan, the whole place is vegan, plant-based. And they have wine. It's just this beautiful place. And he goes, oh, they're cheese. And he showed me this cheese platter that he got. I'm like, okay, I'll go there.
He's in Bologna?
He's in Bologna, yeah. Yeah. And then I'll be one day in London doing a talk. And then I'll be back to, we're going to go to Florence. I'm going to go do a Tuscany thing. And then we'll go back and visit him for his last weekend. He's like, this is like 2 weeks before finals for him. So it's not exactly like the best time to visit him, but he's excited though. So
who are you doing the talk for in London?
It's a functional forum group. They have a restaurant and they have a clinic, and it's called a functional food restaurant. And the menu says, let food be thy medicine, medicine be thy food. And I didn't know this at the time when they sent me the menu, said, oh, pick some stuff you think would be appropriate for your talk. I'm looking at it and going, wow, they have fermented cheeses here. They have sauerkraut on their menu. They have germinated nuts and seeds. What an interesting restaurant. And then when I talked to the guy, he goes, oh, it's our restaurant. It's very specifically a functional food restaurant. I'm like, oh, so cool. So I'm giving a talk for them. And, you know, we're going to talk about nutritional endocrinology and how to use food to balance hormones. So
that's exciting.
Yeah, it's very exciting. So, yep. All right. We'll see you guys soon. Bye.
Bye. Bye.